Case number 1-0093, reel 2.
Vice Marshal Bird Wilson, reel 2.
The point about the army who returned from Dunkirk, they made the accusation that they never saw the RAF fighters over Dunkirk. This did surprise us greatly because, as I've said, we had two patrols over Dunkirk per squadron per day, from dawn till dusk. And whether we were actually over Dunkirk or inland from Dunkirk trying to intercept Germans, I don't know, but we did do quite a lot of interception of Germans over Dunkirk, and we protected the beaches quite considerably. In fact, it was a continuous patrol throughout the whole of the daylight hours.
What kind of a view did you get of the beaches? What did it look like?
There are very big beaches at Dunkirk, from my memory, and there were strings coming from the sand dunes. The strings were people, soldiers, lining up and going down to the water's edge, and a general shambles at the sand dunes. But the when one flew low over Dunkirk, you saw all the soldiers heading for the nearest ship that was going to bring them back to England. We had the misfortune of one of our chaps being shot down by a Ju-88. I think it was Pilot Officer Manger or Pilot Officer Whittaker, and they landed by parachute quite near to the beach. And they made their way with their parachutes towards the boats. And I recall that either of these officers was refused, was not allowed to get aboard one of the boats by an army officer. And it ended up by the pilot officer, either Whittaker or Manger, having to fight his way to get aboard the boat. And I think it came to a bit of a fisticuff against the army officer, who said the boats were for the army, not for the Royal Air Force. And it so happened that the officer concerned was over the beach the next morning on a dawn patrol again. And no doubt this is where some of the ill feeling was beginning to show from the army against the Air Force.
Were you astonished to see what the situation was at Dunkirk? Or
yes, we were. We were greatly shocked to see the number of troops that were coming through Dunkirk, and we knew then that it was their last exit out of France, on the northern part of France. And we did our utmost to protect them, and even protect the ships that were coming back, plying backwards and forwards to England. In fact, one day we saw a naval destroyer being bombed, and I went around to try and show protection to it, and I found that I was being shot at by the destroyer more than I'd been shot at by the Huns, so I rather said to the Navy, look after yourselves. And they're pretty accurate, the naval chaps, and I didn't want to be shot down by our own Navy, so I rather left them to their own devices.
Can you tell me what tactics were employed by fighter pilots in hurricanes against enemy planes? What would be the favoured method of attack?
We had the set down fighter command attacks, And there were varying number of attacks, and the leader would call out, number one attack, go, and the pilot would know exactly what he is expected to do. The formations of that time, with hindsight, were not very good. We were flying in too close a formation, and we were flying in sections of three aircraft altogether. The number three aircraft was usually left behind or on the outside of a circle of a turn, and usually got intercepted by the Germans. We learnt thereafter that a section of two were far better than a section of three. And the advantage that the Germans had over the RAF was that they had taken part in the Spanish War, and they'd learnt their lessons of the Spanish War. We had not learnt any lessons from the Spanish War, and whereas the German fighters were flying in a much fluid formation of fours or twos, we were still in the rather tight, unwieldy formations.
Could you have learnt from the Spanish War without having actually participated, do you think?
Yes, we could have done, and our leaders of that time, when I say leaders, I mean the squadron commanders, should have had better intelligence passed down to them to know exactly what was happening in the Spanish War. With hindsight, likewise, you can never afford not to be participants of a war, of a modern war. We learned a later great deal from the Korean War, and we took part in the Korean War, and our tactics accordingly came along with modern thinking and capabilities. We missed out on the Vietnamese War, but our intelligence and our liaison with Americans was extremely good, and we learned a great deal about the Vietnamese War. But in reality, you cannot afford to not take an interest in a war. The Israelites, in their wars, have used absolute modern tactics, and we are fully abreast with modern tactics in the RAF.
Did you always go up in these formations of three, or were there occasions when you just went up solo?
No, we were always scrambled as a section of three aircraft, or a flight, or which is six aircraft, or a squadron, which is 12 aircraft. We weren't ever scrambled as two aircraft, except when an aircraft has gone unserviceable, and then you're left with only two. And that's not in the actual formations that were adopted up to the Battle of Britain.
Before we leave the Battle for France to go on to the Battle of Britain, is there anything else that you'd like to say about France?
Yes, I think I'd like to say we had finished the Battle of Dunkirk and moved back to Debden. Sorry, we'd moved to Kenly, and we were then informed that we'd be moving north to the north of England in 24 hours. We had already lost our first commanding officer, and we were down to our third commanding officer by this time, which is June 1940, and we'd lost a flight commander and several of our pilots. Therefore, we were due for a rest and retraining, really. And instead of us heading north, our orders got changed at midnight, and we were told we were heading for Le Mans in France. This was a great surprise to us, but off we went. And the next day, we landed in France again, and the squadron took on the retreat or the rest of the retreat through France. And we were just sent up on numerous patrols around places like Le Havre and Rouen, and we didn't have any radar to tell us what was happening, but by sheer eye-boiling, using our eyes, we managed to intercept quite a few German aircraft. And the smoke from the oil tanks at Rouen went up thousands and thousands and thousands of feet. And one day at the top of this plume of black smoke was a parachute. Goodness knows what it was doing up there, but it was coming down. We hadn't got any fighters up there, and I don't think anybody else had any, but it could well have been a spy being dropped or something like that, something romantic like that. We moved through through France, south of Paris, Le Mans, and gradually went to Caen and operated from an old airfield, an ordinary field, farmer's field. And slept in the barns with no provisions for bedding or anything like that. We just slept where you lay down, really.
How much pressure and tension were you under during the Battle for France?
A great deal of tension, because we didn't know really what to expect, and every time we took off, we just went into the sort of the unknown and hoped to intercept some Germans. We had quite a few raw pilots at this time, people who had only got 10 hours on Hurricanes. And I remember the squadron taking off in the squadron formation, and these young chaps, when I say young, I was only 19 or 20 then, but these inexperienced pilots were overtaking the squadron commander on takeoff, because they didn't really dare throttle back. And therefore it was up to the more experienced pilots, who had been through the northern part of France fighting, and to try and look after these young inexperienced chaps.
How could you do that?
Well, we didn't have time to take them, give them any lessons during the time, because every sortie we took off, we were going into a fight, and the only lessons we could teach them was verbal lessons, to tell them to throttle back, and that their aircraft wouldn't stall, and they shouldn't be frightened about throttling back. But it's a lesson that, it's a picture that stays in my mind, of seeing these two young chaps just wouldn't throttle back, and they really led the squadron off the ground.
How much chance of survival would those pilots with only 10 hours experience have if they got into a fight with a German fighter?
Not a lot, really. This is where some of our casualties were experienced. They couldn't turn their Hurricanes tight enough, or they hadn't learned to turn their aircraft tight enough, and they were just raw meat to the German, more experienced German aircraft. But likewise, vice versa, the Germans had had casualties, and we picked out many of their less experienced pilots and shot them down, so it's 50-50, I suppose, really.
When were you eventually withdrawn from Normandy?
We actually came out of... we were... Oh, there's one interesting part is that we finally got back to a western part of France, to a place, to Dinard. And we landed at Dinard and operated from Dinard. And the armistice on the 17th of June was about to be signed by the French. And the colonel, the French station commander, whatever he called himself, called our squadron commander in and said we had 1 hour to get off his airfield, otherwise our Hurricanes would be destroyed. not a very friendly gesture, because we were trying to help France, but at any rate, that was our orders, and quite honestly, I've never seen a squadron scramble so quickly in its life. And we then went to the Channel Isles. We were ordered to land on the Channel Isles at Jersey and patrol Cherbourg from Jersey and from Guernsey. We had B flight at Guernsey and A flight at Jersey. And so we carried out patrols over Cherbourg while the army were being evacuated from there. And finally we left the Channel Isles on the 27th of June, 1940.
Was that the only instance you came across of French hostility?
Yes, it was, really. It was, they were extremely worried, in fact, because of the armistice, and they weren't very friendly to us on that particular occasion. But on the other part of it, they were very friendly. I mentioned a little time ago that the Hurricane was a very robust aircraft, and its particular undercarriage was very good. A Spitfire, and I should like to register this point, a Spitfire would never have been able to operate from the fields that we operated from in France. The undercarriage of the Spitfire is much more fragile, but the Hurricane was a very robust undercarriage, and it is a wider part, and the fields that we had to operate, some of the fields were had wheat growing in the, up in fair height, and when we landed our flaps were hitting the wheat of the, in the fields when we landed at some fields around Le Mans. So the story that pity we didn't have Spitfires in the Battle of France, the Spitfires would have been casualties all over the place by the rugged fields we had to operate it from.
Were you ever attacked on the ground whilst you were in France?
No, not in the true sense of being attacked. When we were at Le Mans, we experienced bombing, and this was rather peculiar experience, because the Germans used to come over and we could hear the noise of their engines. They had a peculiar rhythm, and no sooner they appeared over the airfield than Very lights used to go up from the side of the airfield, and thereafter bombs used to come down. Now we came to the conclusion that these were fifth columnists putting up lights for the Germans, and there's no other exclamation to it. Likewise, we used to pick up a lot of Morse on our radios whenever we are scrambled, and we put this down to fifth columnists reporting to the Germans that we had taken off to intercept.
What could you do about these suspicions?
Nothing. It was rumored that we did catch a wireless operator, a fifth columnist wireless operator, on the side of Le Mans airfield, but I never checked it out and never verified the statement.
As far as the Channel Islands were concerned, whilst you were there, did you come across any apprehension on the part of the people there about a German invasion?
No, not from the more senior people. They knew the there was a possibility of invasion and the possibility of occupation. The only experience we had was young ladies coming up to the pilots, us pilots, and asking if we would fly them back to England. Well, being in a single-seater fighter, it was a pretty tight squeeze. I'm not saying that everybody obeyed the King's regulations and didn't succumb to the request from a pretty young lady, because as many a year or two later I did meet a lady at a party, and she said she'd come from the Channel Isles, and I said, how did you get back? And she said, I came in a hurricane. I said, well, you better keep that one quiet. And that may have been one of those ladies that we had at, I think it was Guernsey at the time. But the pilot would have had to fly without a parachute, and that would have been a tricky situation. And he'd have to fly, not complaining, I wouldn't think, on the girl's lap.
Would he have been able to operate the controls properly?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Now, can we come on to the Battle of Britain in the summer of 1940? And can you tell me, in as much detail as you can, about your own part in it?
The squadron were back at base at Debden, and likewise moving forward on a rotating basis to Marcasham Heath. Once again, we're back on the convoy patrols, and we use the convoy patrolling as an exercise to train our pilots and keep them on the alert. And likewise, we were then on our fourth or fifth commanding officer. And he was naturally trying to train up his 17th squadron to what he wanted to make sure that it was trained properly for the fight that was going to come. It was obvious a fight was going to come with the Germans breathing at the French ports. And we knew that our days of reckoning were ahead of us. But there was no apprehension about it. The pilots weren't terribly worried about it. They were still very jolly. And when we got scrambled, we scrambled against a gradual increasing number of enemy aircraft. And we usually went up in flights, and then it grew into squadrons. You read many stories nowadays of pilots saying that they weren't worried and weren't frightened when they saw little dots in the sky which gradually increased in numbers and grew in size as they came from the French coast towards the English, over Kent and towards London. I maintain that if anybody says that they weren't frightened or apprehensive at such an occasion, then I think he's a very bad liar, because you cannot help but get worried when you look around you and you see 11 other aircraft, and you look ahead of you and you see, as the battle went on, hundreds of aircraft coming towards you, whether they be fighters or bombers. And I don't believe any man is that tough that he can't have been a bit worried, and some very worried, at the odds that the RAF were fighting. I know that we had a lot of squadrons, but likewise insufficient squadrons to take on this horde of aircraft which gradually built up during the battle. And I openly admit that I was worried, and I was frightened at times. And as the battle went on and on, we were praying for bad weather. It's the only time in England I think anybody ever prayed for bad weather. But somehow during the whole of the battle we had beautiful weather, sunshine and blue skies. And we prayed mighty hard. And fatigue broke into a chap's mentality in the most peculiar ways. Some really got the jitters and facial twitches and stuff like that. Others, as I did, I had nightmares at night. And I admitted that I used to wake up in my in the dispersal hut, sleeping near within 25 yards of my aircraft, and I was night flying my Hurricane. And this went on for quite a long time. But we did. We had quite a lot of success in the squadron. Being at Debden, we were scrambled against a horde of bombers coming in and fighter escorts coming in. And as I said, we didn't know who was protecting us or whether other squadrons had been sent out with us. And we were 12 aircraft to go in and hit the Germans. And our radar and our controllers were absolutely excellent. They really told us what was happening. But very seldom did we have a chance to get above the bombers. We were told to go to a certain height, and this height we went to. With hindsight, we should have gone higher and used our speed from our dives to come down faster against the bombers and the fighters. But the Hurricanes were used to take on the bombers. And regardless of the glamour of the Spitfires, they should have been there to protect us, the Hurricanes, or the bomber hitters. We were the bomber hitters. And this is our role, and this is what we carried out as much as we could.
Going over the whole period of the Battle of Britain, when did it reach its height as far as you personally were concerned?
I don't know what you mean by height of the Battle of Britain. It is a running combat. Practically every day we were in the battle or in the fight, but naturally it got more and more intense as we approached September and there throughout the whole of September. We were having successes the whole time, and we had some very fine chaps in the squadron. We had Flying Officer Count Manfred Chernin by name, and he was an Austrian count, and he was a great leader of people. He believed in the head-on attack on against bombers and also against the Me-110s. And we used to go up and practice this head-on attack, and it was a terrifying thing to see a fighter coming in at you. And the Germans must have been very worried. We had a squadron commander called Squadron Leader Williams, who came down from the Air Ministry, and he believed in the head-on attack, and he said the next raid we have, we go up to intercept, we will do a head-on attack. And it turned out to be a head-on attack into Me-110s, and I'm afraid they got the better of our squadron commander. And all we found of him was a shirt after he was killed in off the south coast, having done a head-on attack in a 110 against the 110.
Can you describe how these head-on attacks were launched?
No, well, the only tactics you used was to try and get above the circle, defensive circle, as they used to adopt the Me-110s, and dive down into the try and get the leader of the circle. And likewise, sometimes chaps got on to the inner side of the circle, going the opposite direction. This was a bit of a dangerous position to be in, because